sweet tea, and creativity. Time for more Jessica Burtis questions on the Midweek Drive.
You know what they call sweet tea in the South?
What's that?
Tea.
Okay, excellent. I could lip read. So magical times have actually occurred because David Fox is back with his magic. How are you, David?
Very good, Alex. Good to see everybody tonight, and I hope you're all keeping well.
Well, yes. We figure that, you know, we're asking you to do probably a couple of these gigs because obviously we've got the birthday week for Sandra North. She's doing all sorts of things. She might be with us tomorrow. But for the moment, of course, we've got the awesomely talented Taryn Kay back with us. How are you, Taryn?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous. And I noticed you've changed the framing a little bit around from that point of view. So you've adjusted the sort of thing. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, very impressed, Taryn. Thank you.
You did it again. It's me. You got centered. It's almost like actually that sort of sequence in the Adventure of the Orville where they say, okay, just move to the side a little bit. It's a little point there. If you've never seen the Orville, Taryn, you're missing a treat is what I can say. Jessica Burtis is back with us, of course, from North Carolina. This time, hopefully, with a good solid Zoom connection. How are you, Jessica?
Doing okay.
Yep, that's what I said. Zoom connection. Okay, she needs the magic, David.
There's snow outside.
Something peculiar is happening in North Carolina today, Jessica. That's all I can say. It's mystical. Check the Bears. And Rebecca Bond, of course, with us again from Norwich. How are you, Rebecca?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. Nice to see everyone.
Splendid. So, Taryn, I think when we first put you together with David, David did some balloon magic. Was that the case? It was one of your first Zoomers that with us. Or do you not remember the balloons?
No. That must be frankly, I think.
Was it? Really? Our memory just phases away. Never seen
I'm
the
sure
balloons.
I wouldn't remembered that.
But Taryn, as you can see, and indeed our listener in their mind's eye can also see, the words David Fox Magic ? In the middle. It's quite significant, you know, very, very significant from that point of view. And I think it's fair to say that this is a man who's taken his magical tricks and treats and brought them to a whole new Zoom audience to the benefit of all mankind, really, you know, or humankind. Let's be non-specific about this. So, Taryn, have you got any questions you want to put to David before we actually ask him on behalf of Jessica and Rebecca to actually maybe get engaging with this magic on this program today?
Yes, I'd like to know more about what type of magic you do. You said the balloons. That's not the act with the balloons where they drop the balloons. No. Alex is shaking his head. It's no.
We could go there, Taryn, but no, please. That's the kind of nightmare I like to put to my past, really. I'll leave that for another time.
Okay. But I would like to know more about your magic, what type of magic you do.
Well, thank you, Taryn. It's lovely to see you tonight. I hope you're keeping well, obviously. Very peculiar times at the moment for us all.
Yes.
Magic, I'm very fortunate. It's my passion. I was a school teacher in a past life, but for the past 10 years or so, I've been performing at weddings and corporate events, parties. So I'm very lucky. So I think in these instances, you must do quite a wide variety of magical effects, you know, the card
just
effects.
Quickly, David, maybe. I'll point out that when you say a past life, you haven't died and been reincarnated. This is actually the same continuous life. It was just in another aspect of your current life, you were a school teacher. Sorry to be a pedant, but it is Friday.
Rather like, not like Doctor Who, you know, not like regeneration aspect, but it's very interesting what Taryn said there about, I think you have to have quite a wide repertoire of magical effects to engage the modern audience, hopefully engage the modern audience, yes.
No pressure, yeah. David, but Taryn has worked with some of the best magicians in our time, so, you know, she knows her stuff, yes. I'm fairly certain.
So many good guys out there.
I worked with Paul Daniels.
Whoa, a lovely man. I love that. Yes. I met him on a few occasions.
Oh, great. There you go. Yes, and a lovely Debbie McGee.
I was about to say that. His wife is a lovely lady as well.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, actually, the first time I met him, I was doing work experience for the Evening Times in Glasgow because I wanted to be a journalist in those days. This has gone back a long time. And he came
Rebecca,
to
this
present-
is where you could end up. I'm just putting it out there.
Yes. He came to present a cheque for the person who won the Littlewoods pools, but the person never turned up. So I chatted to him. Yeah, because, you know, who knows, he had debt issues, whatever. But he's a lovely man, and we He was a great magician, a fantastic magician. He did so much for magic, Paul Daniels, yes. And but you knew him well. Did you work with him then, Taryn? Yeah?
Yes. Well, he did a TV programme called The Whizbit Stories.
That's right.
He had these characters that used to dance, like sponge balls and pack of cards. I was the orange sponge ball.
You see?
Could have been anybody. You didn't see my face.
Taryn, it couldn't, because only you could be that orange sponge ball. You know, this is you know, the highlight of one's week, if nothing else.
That's right. And Debbie McGee was the choreographer. So we had a good laugh, but it could have been anybody, trust me.
Well,
no, but I did the audition, I got the job, so.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go, yes.
Good memory.
And just very briefly, Jessica, because I appreciate that being in North Carolina, you might think of what strange people are they speaking about? Paul Daniels is a magician, known for his catchphrase, you will like this, not a lot, but a little, you know, not a lot, but you like it. That's sort of a variation on that theme. Okay. His wife was Debbie McGee. I think, Rebecca, are you familiar with Paul Daniels and Debbie McGee, or is it a case of, no, again, I'm far too young?
No, I have actually. I think it's through my parents making references, and I think at some point I've asked, oh, who's that? You know, where is that saying from? And that's probably where I've got to know them.
It's important to have those little notes on the whole sort of system. David, I mean, I know we're putting you on the spot here, but do you want to actually go straight into this magic scenario and just sort of launch something for us today, which maybe actually Rebecca could possibly describe using her descriptive English and journalism skills, etc. Jessica can actually cheerlead for, and Taryn can actually give you the response that we would expect from an orange sponge scenario. Taryn, you've done much more, I know this, but you know, she's doing it now on camera. It's just side to side. It's genius.
I know.
Well, with Taryn talking about Paul Daniels, I was going to do something with cards. Mm. I will do an effect that I spoke to Paul Daniels about. It doesn't involve cards. I'll move my chair away as well, because
when Sarah Huntley joins us, we have to move our chair away, if only to stand up, you know, because that's very important to actually ensure. Welcome, Sarah, to this slightly strange thing. We've already identified Taryn's major role, or one of her major roles. Taryn, would you like to share with Sarah this awesome time when you worked with Debbie McGee and Paul Daniels as?
Yes, as an orange sponge ball. It was on, he had a TV show called The Whizbit Stories, which was all about a magician and these little characters like the wizard, but he had his sponge balls and he had the magic pack of cards. And I was the orange sponge ball.
I mean, this is genius material here. And meanwhile, David has got his desk out in front of us. So this is going to be interesting.
Can you all see this okay? Sarah, Taryn, Jess, Alex and Rebecca, can you see these cups?
Yes.
I spoke to Paul Daniels about this effect, and he always loved performing this. It's one of the classic effects of magic. And it uses three cups and three balls, ladies and gents. And of course, the magic wand. Don't leave home without it. The first ball, the first cup.
My mother always used to tell me that, David. It didn't do me any good whatsoever, leaving home without the magic wand.
Well, the moment, we have to stay in, but I'm dropping off.
You see, that's exactly what my mother said too. For goodness sake, don't drop your wand. It's hopeless.
Or your balls.
Or your balls. That's just what I was going to say.
You can tell I don't get out very much, can't you, these days? Yeah, like most people. But the balls appear, ladies and gents, to disappear and reappear. Reappear and disappear. This is a whole basis of the effect. You know, it's over, it's over 4,000 years old, the cup and ball effect, ladies and gents. Now, the final point here is, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to just tap it here, and all the balls should be back under the cups. You see how this works? One, two and three. Now, maybe Sarah, which cup would you like? One, two or three, Sarah? What would you like?
I'd like number three, please.
Number three. Super.
Yeah.
Wave to number three, click the fingers, and would you believe it, a ball has jumped to Sarah's cup. But You're probably wondering what would have happened had Sarah gone for the first cup. A ball would have gone under that cup there, because this is magic. Or at least I hope it's magic, ladies and gents. Two balls under the middle cup, one ball on the top. Could you click your fingers? One, two, three. We're getting into this now.
Click those fingers, Rebecca. Click them.
I was trying to in time.
Back under the central cup. Now, one, two, and three. It appears, ladies and gents, as if balls are going under the cups. Okay. But are balls really going under the cups? Or perhaps, just maybe, okay, if we just give a little bit of a shake here, maybe just possibly one cup, being the middle cup. Now, can you keep a secret, ladies and gents? Could you keep a secret?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, yes.
Just maybe. Say yes.
Yes, yes.
Even if you can't, just say yes.
Yes.
What's called sleight of hand? Or as the French people say, léger de main, which simply means light of hand, to have tricky fingers, tricky hands. It appears as if balls are being left under cups and possibly occasionally the odd ball is being taken away because of this. Can you see what I'm doing?
Yes.
I've got a ball hidden in my hand here.
Yeah.
Sarah, Taryn, mm-hmm. Jess, Alex and Rebecca. And when I take the ball away, the hand is turned away from the audience, okay? But what I'm actually doing is I'm releasing the ball behind the cup, and it looks great. Well, there's two balls there already. Now, into the pocket go the balls. A tap in the pocket, a tap in the cups. Everybody watch the table, watch the cups, watch the table, watch the cups, because I don't want you to miss the three tangerines.
Tangerines and not oranges, Taryn, you see?
No.
It's very a beautiful good. Piece of magic. But what Paul Daniels said to me was, he said, the simplicity of the effect is what has made it timeless, what has made this piece of magic. It's all sleight of hand. There's no technology. There's no gimmicks. It's a beautiful little piece of magic. But it was nice when Taryn brought up Paul Daniels tonight to perform this. And I really hope you enjoyed the cup and ball effect tonight, ladies and gents.
That's good. Amazing. I can't even do justice to the listener what we just witnessed. I mean, that's so clever and so, you know, as you say, simplistic, but really, really effective. Like, I could watch that 100 times over and never get bored.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. No, it's beautiful. It's a lovely... And the cups, these cups, Roy Walton, the great Roy Walton, who was the owner of Tam Shepherd's Trick Shop in Glasgow, is still there, Tam Shepherd. He gave me these cups many years ago, so I still use these cups.
Amazing.
They're a nice weight. They're a good weight to perform. Mm. I'm getting into magician things now. I probably should...
Too technical for us.
Jessica, I noticed you look a bit bemused there in North Carolina. What are your thoughts on this little experience?
I love it. I think practically, like little tricks like that, the sleight of hand, it's so impressive.
She's frozen again. She needs that magic just to actually unfreeze her.
Understand. Oh my goodness. Yes, I know. Zoom kept skipping. So David, you were magically teleporting around your screen. But no, I love things like that. I even when I watch those shows where they try to break down.
And just break down like that.
It's still just amazing.
Jessica, we're going to have to sort out your Zoom link. Sarah, let's turn to yourself. What are your sort of thoughts on this? And have you worked with any magicians in your career, of course?
Well, I think I was always a bit too plump to be a magician's assistant. I was always a bit worried my bottom might get in the way. I'm not like Taryn, who is, you know, she's very modest. She's always been a nymph size, haven't you? You've always been very thin.
On the slimmer side, yes.
We're girls of a certain age, and she's always had a glorious figure, and she obviously has now. I David, I find it fascinating because for the listener, it was almost like, wasn't it, girls, Alex? David was almost showing us how he was doing that with the holding of the balls, so to speak. Be careful. Phenomenal. This joke could run on an old fez like I am. But it was interesting how he was showing us how he was secretly holding his balls. That I thought that was going
I'm
to
glad
reveal.
You said that, Sarah, because I could not have kept a straight face.
How you were doing it, and you were playing with us, really, weren't you? Because I was thinking, oh, he's going to tell us. I'm sorry, I'm not going to repeat that line again. He was telling us how he's manipulating his balls, but that was not meaning. But then when he showed us they turned into oranges, I was just thinking, oh, so you're very naughty and you're very clever, David. But I was listening to podcasts have been keeping me sane during this lockdown, and it's so lovely to see you all. And thank you, David, for entertaining us, because that's so refreshing. But I was listening to Debbie McGee on a podcast recently, and she was playing with us like you were about half explaining about how you get sawn in half.
Yes.
And she was saying how it almost went wrong and hinting heavily, but you know, you've got that you belong to the magic circle, you can never say. But suffice to say, I always knew, unlike Taryn, that I was almost too big a girl to be able to be sawn in half, because I was worried that my proportions wouldn't get into the boxes. But Debbie McGee did say there was one particular occasion where they'd had quite a nice liquid lunch, her, and I think they were doing it for something like Elton John or somebody amazing, where it was like a private party. And she did feel a slight sword at one point, and thinking, oh, golly, I haven't quite got myself in the right position here. And she sort of indicated to Paul in no uncertain terms, could we just stop a minute, because we've all got a bit lapsed. So my question, sorry, rambling, is, David, do you make it seem so...
Effortless.
Effortless and so suave, but is it... You don't need to give anything away, but to be a magician of your quality, as you obviously are, is it like, I know it's sleight of hand, but is it like a precision, a drill? Do you have to practice each day the trick so that you've got it down to a fine art each day, like an actor would practice their lines?
A very, very good question, Taryn. Sorry, Sarah, about that. I would say here, one man influenced me a lot. It's very interesting you've asked that question. Many years ago, I did a gig for the Army, for the Officer Training Centre near Loughborough. And a brigadier came to talk to all the trainees, and I thought he was fantastic. But he said, the moment you think you're good at something, you're finished. And we had a chat after the show and had a drink with him. And what I look at is, yes, you have to be very, very meticulous in your preparation. You always have to be practicing and working hard. And as the brigadier said, the moment you think you're good at something, you're finished. So I think that applies to magicians. You must, or any walk of life, you've always got to be working hard and trying to better yourself. It's a very good question there, Sarah. Yes, you've always got to be working hard.
But before you did that trick for all of us tonight, did you warm up? So like any actor would go through their lines.
I did. I didn't. Sometimes with Alex, it's great. We can have a little chat about things, and we can talk about things. And I know Alex, very much being the professional he is, he likes to ad lib a little bit.
One day I might do a good radio show. I just keep trying. That's the whole thing.
Well, the perfect radio show. That's what it's all about. Moving towards
one day.
But you know, you've always got to prepare. You're right, Sarah. And I mean, I'm very fortunate. I love performing magic. Doing the virtual shows has been a nice release during lockdown. So it's good. It's all good. Yeah, it's all interesting.
Rebecca, any other questions you want to put to David at present?
Yeah, I think what makes you so good at what you do, David, is you have this amazing uplifting energy. Every time I come on a Zoom call with you, it's just lovely, because you have this amazing energy about you. And I think that really shines through in your work. So is it safe to say you enjoy your job? Do you enjoy what you do? And is this what you plan to do for the rest of your days, pretty much?
Forever.
Forever, yeah. Is this what you plan to do? Like, is it going to be a hobby forever at least?
Well, it's very another interesting question, Rebecca. It just seemed very natural. It wasn't something that I set out to do as a profession. I think, as I've said to you all, being a teacher, I was a teacher before. Teacher is a performance art, as Alex will tell you about being a lecturer at university.
Sarah and myself, when we do our performance art in front of various sort of levels, it's extraordinary. You know, it's like sort of capturing lightning in a bottle several times a day.
Well, you've got a lovely energy about you, Alex, and indeed all the other guests here tonight and all the other people that we talk to on the shows. And that's what it's all about. It's about being able to be, hopefully engage people, keep people's attention. I love teaching English as well. I have one student I've been helping with her English during the lockdown. She's studying Othello, and you know what a play Othello. It's one of my favourite Shakespeare plays, and she's enjoying it. So that's been a nice thing to do. But it was nice, very kind of you to say that, Rebecca. And I think that's the thing. It's about forming relationships with people as you perform, hopefully. That's what it's all about. Yeah,
it definitely shines through. As I said, I think that really comes through, and it shows that you enjoy what you do, and I think that's really nice.
That's very kind. I appreciate that. That's very kind.
Taryn, given that, as far as I'm aware, we started doing these shows long before even Sarah Huntley had arrived on our sort of broadcasting sequence and so on. But anything you'd like to add?
Well, Sarah, have I met you before, or Dana?
Yes, we have. We've met before on one of Alex's shows.
You
and anything served.
Are you being served?
Are you being served? Yes.
Hmm.
Actually, yeah. Taryn, I want to ask you, where does your name come from, Taryn?
Taryn, well, Tyrone Power, the actor, had a daughter called Taryn. And my mum loved Tyrone Power, and she liked the name. So it was copied from Tyrone Power's daughter, who was an actress as well, Taryn Power. Yeah.
I mean, it's astounding, isn't it, Taryn? You've got sort of Polish background. You've got a mum who actually names you after a male film star. It's amazing. You actually turned out sane. That's all I can say.
So. Well, I don't know about that. That's pushing it a bit. Sane.
Yeah. We can also, Sarah, say that we can thank Taryn, because it was through Taryn that I was first introduced to She Who Shall Be Named Busy Girl back in the day. But that's another line. Oh. We'll step into a different line entirely. Still, I might reveal that later, Taryn, when I write the memoirs. Let's see if Jessica her Zoom package. Jessica, any questions for the team that you'd like to throw in at present?
Yes, okay. So before Zoom can...
Oh, not again.
Catch me. David, I'm very curious. Do you have a favorite trick to perform? No, did it do it again?
She's not having the greatest of success, really, in North Carolina. It's almost as though there's an anti-American sort of theme going through in Zoom here. It's not going to happen. Never mind. Jessica, try one more time. David will be sending his positive vibes out to you now.
Thank you. David, do you have a favorite trick to perform?
Well, it's another great question, Jessica. And I hope you're keeping well over in the States and you're avoiding the cold weather that they've been getting in Texas, which has been, mm-hmm. been terrible to see that. Favourite, I love performing card magic. I love doing psychological magic. I think it really depends on the audience. If you can analyse the audience and you can work out what the audience would like to see, and you feel an empathy with the audience and you can really hit it off with them. So I think a large part of performing magic is knowing your audience and knowing what they would enjoy and adapting your performance to suit your audience. That's the key. But I love performing card magic. That's how I started as a magician. It's always a great pleasure if you can pull something off in front of an audience that uses some sleight of hand with cards. I enjoy that. But do you enjoy magic though, Jessica? Do you like watching? Do you have any favourite magicians you like to watch?
Yes, I do like watching magic shows. I can remember the first one that I saw you perform. You were still in the studio without having to wear masks. And yes, you did a trick for us.
Those were the days. Three of us who actually were in the studios. Amazing.
That was about maybe over a year ago.
I think it would be almost
just virtually before all this started. Yeah. Yeah, incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of these days, David will actually sort of work his magic on Zoom as well. Sorry, Jessica. Extraordinary. Weeks go by, no problem whatsoever. Suddenly, it just sort of all goes slightly skew-whiff. But never mind. Let's continue regardless. David, I was fascinated by the historical element because I think probably both Taryn, Sarah, Rebecca, Jessica and our listener will be amazed with the history that you've gone into, because going all the way back thousands of years, past lots of pandemics, lots of plagues, back to the Egyptians and so on. Just share with us your interest in that, because that's quite fascinating. And you said, of course, the trick you performed for us this evening, an ancient aspect, really kind of variation on the Sheldgrain.
That's right, yes. I think magic, that's the interesting thing about it. It is very mysterious. It's always been virtually a fringe art. But in recent years, it has become more mainstream, you know, and it ebbs and flows, Paul Daniels did a fantastic job in bringing magic into the mainstream and showing people, you know, how this could be, you know, adapted, you know, for maybe a party or a wedding or something like that. But it's a fascinating thing that it has existed for so thousands and thousands and thousands of years. I think the lovely thing about it is the intimacy when you're in a house party. I love performing at house parties when you get people around you and it's a great challenge. They're watching out for every move you make. And I just think it's a great challenge on a personal level. If you can leave the house at the end of the night, having had lots of people around you, right on top of you, and they've enjoyed themselves. Having said that, it's great to perform on stage as well. But there's something about a house party, a very intimate occasion, where the magician can really test their ability, you know, as a magician. That's something. And it dates back thousands of years, way, way back to the Egyptian times and probably before then, Alex, and everybody else.
Well, you know, rule of six obviously needs to apply across the centuries. Otherwise, who knows what could happen to the human race, but never mind. Sarah, any other questions or thoughts you'd like to put to either the team or indeed David?
Well, I was going to say, David, I just find it fascinating. And, you know, the cops, one of the things when I was a little girl, my granddad used to do that trick, you know, like you get there's an old East End Jew, you know, and he'd get his, go, have you got any money, love? And you go, no. And then he'd do that and he'd wiggle his ear and then there'd be a shilling that would come out behind the ears. Yeah. Ooh, sleight of hand, which as a little girl, I just thought was fascinating in the combat Peter, combat Paul with the two little. And then one of the things as a little girl that I thought was great, and they were very good, was I'm sure we all had, did you have these girls? You know, the cop thing where you had the egg cop and you go, abracadabra, and then you do that and it's the egg's there and then the egg's gone, because actually there's, I won't give it away, but you know, it's how you do it. But one thing that really fascinated me, and you obviously, as Rebecca was saying, you've got such a good energy and way with you. I went to visit my daughter in Cardiff and she took me to lunch at this pub, and it was a chap going around doing magic. And he was so nice, because sometimes I find that a bit embarrassing. You feel embarrassed for them anyway. He was doing that kind of thing. But one of the things he did, and I just could not work out, I can get, but I don't, we none of us understand how you do this magic, and it is magic. But not only did he do that, the card games, he said, okay, I want you to think of a word. Do you do that as well? I was thinking all the way back, driving back to London, how the hell did he do that? Because he suddenly said, I can't remember. Can you think of a word? And I went, yeah. And he said, don't tell me it. And then he did some other magic. And it was the word. I was, you know, like, can you think of a place? And so I know what it was. Can you think of a place, a particular place? I've Buckingham Palace. And he knew it. How the hell did he do that with the magic? Do you do that kind of magic as well?
Well, obviously he was very, very good if he was doing that type of magic. And that is known as mentalism, Sarah and everybody else. And it's a lovely form of magic. I love performing that type of magic with audiences, and yes, it's lovely. If I think that's the thing, if people feel that in some way their mind has been read or a prediction has been made, it's very magical, and people will hold that. In many ways, that can be a lot more powerful than a visual magical effect like the one I've showed you tonight. So obviously that he was an exceptional magician if he was able to do that and leave that impression on you as well.
And I also carry on.
Go on, Rebecca, quickly.
Something else, Rebecca, he did. Like, I can't remember, but he asked a couple of questions which were all going on in my head. And at the end of it all, that's right, it was Buckingham Palace, it was a place. And then he said, and just like handed me his card and said, is that what you were thinking of, the word? How the hell?
Rebecca.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Sarah, I've actually experienced David's, he on one of our calls did it, an example of mentalism. Did you say it was called, David? I don't want to get
that wrong. Mentalism. Yeah.
And amazing. It blew my mind. He guessed the name of my friend whose birthday was coming up. He just told me to think of my friend, keep her in my mind. And he knew. He revealed these cards that had her name on the back, and to this day I still tell people that it happened. I told Jen after that call what had happened. I was that amazed, so impressed.
And that's because David is very, very good.
Yes, definitely.
You need to tell Simon Cowell this, Alex. I'm still waiting to make the first million. No, mentalism is and the king of mentalism is Derren Brown, without a doubt. He's fantastic. If you haven't seen him live, try and get to see. Well, obviously, at the moment, we can't see him live because of the lockdowns. But Derren Brown is phenomenal. I've seen him on two occasions. He's a lovely man, but he is the king of mentalism at the moment. He's fantastic. He's
It has been extraordinary. David, we have a couple of minutes left. Do you have a very speedy trick you could actually wrap up the sequence with today, just to sort of end that as a sort of aperitif, obviously, to when Rebecca joins us again, probably tomorrow. We'll be back and sorting out other bits and pieces. Where would you like to take us, David?
Well, let's do something with cards then. And it's very kind, once again, that you've allowed me to do some magic tonight on the show, Alex. And, I'm always very like to ad-lib, like yourself, and it's been great seeing everybody.
What do you mean ad-lib? I've been working on this script for years.
Make it seem so natural. You probably noticed the big card here. Can you see the big card? Which is the King of Spades. Can you see that? Sarah, Taryn, Jess, Alex and Rebecca. We'll pop the big card here onto the table. Now, I have got a deck of normal cards and I'm going to riffle down into the cards and maybe, Sarah, just say stop whenever you're ready. Is that okay? Let's go.
Stop.
Quite near the bottom there. Now, we're going to flick a card out. Now, wouldn't it be good, ladies and gents, if this card here match the big card? That would be incredible, wouldn't it?
It would. So very, very good.
The King of Spades. No.
No.
So what we need to do is we need to change the big card into Taryn's card. Is it the Queen of Hearts?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was worried. Oh,
God. I think Taryn deserves a big round of applause for that, ladies and gents. Give Taryn a round of applause. Now, that's one way to make a card appear and disappear. There's another way. We'll just tear up the Queen of Hearts. See, we'll tear up. Now, it's very difficult, ladies and gentlemen, to make a card disappear entirely. Anyone that knows anything about royalty will know this. Kings and queens seldom disappear easily. Could you see that little piece of the queen that's left over? Can you see the little corner there? And what we will do, ladies and gentlemen, we'll pop the little corner of the queen onto the blue tack there. And can you still all see her there? Yeah?
Yes.
So she's not going away. She's not going away. Now, it is Friday, of course. I always like to get a little bit of a libation in for a Friday. It is Schlur. I'm going for non-alcoholic at the moment because I'm doing magic, of course. But there's a little bit of magic that goes with the Schlur bottle. Oh, it's a trick lighter, this one, I think. There we go. Watch this. You watching? Can you see that there?
The bottle has now been set alight and excitement reigns.
On the back of the bottle, there's a Queen of Hearts there. Now, wouldn't it be something very special if the little corner of the queen matched the corner on the back of the bottle? What do you think, ladies and gentlemen?
And it does. To the listener, it matches.
It does, yes.
Amazing. Now,
normally, I would give the bottle out to the person that had hired me for the magic show so that they could drink the Schlur. But I will drink this on your behalf tonight, ladies and gents. I'll enjoy this. But I do hope you enjoyed a little bit of magic. It's been great to come back on again, Isabel. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, David. That's amazing.
Great, good.
So, Sarah, I'll award you the role of asking the last two questions. Off you go, Sarah, to wrap us up today.
Well, I'd like to ask David and Rebecca and Jess and Taryn, have you had a wonderful time? Have you had a magical time?
Yes, been entertained.
We have indeed, I have.
And will you be abracadabbering again and coming back?
Most definitely.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Stops, nobody knows. Every time.
Well, it's taken time, but it seems as though people are gradually beginning to settle into this whole notion of distance learning and synchronous and asynchronous learning and all those wonderful techniques and technologies that we've been using in universities and, of course, schools as well from that point of view. However, what's going to happen in a few months' time, or when we supposedly go back to the sense of things as they used to be? Will we ever go back to how they used to be? Well, maybe somebody who can actually address that and talk about some of the future of schooling in the 21st century is indeed the founder and director of My Online Schooling, the wonderful Tom Crombie. How are you, Tom?
I'm really well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, flexibility, it's one of those wonderful words that we often use. Agility, being more agile learners, lifelong learners. These are all wonderful terms that have been echoing through the debates and discussions in pedagogy for really the last 20, 30, 40 years. Has the last year really impacted and effectively started addressing the fact that, look, we need to really adjust our education so that it does become more appropriate for the 21st century?
I think one thing that COVID has done is brought about so many incredible challenges, but it's also brought about opportunity as well. And what it's done is it's allowed us perhaps to maybe rethink some of the traditional models that we currently adopt in society. And one of those incredibly important models is that of schooling and of education. And I think this is an opportunity now that we've had, young people have had an opportunity of engaging in a different way of learning through online, although it's been a real challenge. It's given us this opportunity to maybe rethink about that model, rethink about that structure, utilize innovation, utilize the technology that is certainly coming within education to rethink the traditional model of schooling. And if we can, utilize those keywords that you said there, flexibility, agility, and allow young people to learn in a way that works for them at a pace that works for them, then online learning brings all of those together.
Certainly that balance between classrooms and indeed home learning seems to be sort of echoing that sort of line that you've been saying there. 66%, I see, of parents believe that the future of schooling will be hybrid learning, that combination of both.
Yeah, and that's very much in agreement with what we believe. We believe this, what in education you would call blended learning, so that mix between in-person and perhaps online or independent activity taken outside of the physical classroom is going to be the best of both. It's going to allow young people to be put at the centre of their education, to learn in a way that works for them, at a pace that works for them, but complement that with the in-person learning could be a really, really powerful, rich model. It's going to allow for disruption-free learning from an environment that works well for that young person. It's going to allow young people perhaps that have got special educational needs, physical or mental health conditions, which perhaps impact their learning, to access it in a different way, in a way that works for them, but still to have that physical contact with friends, with teachers, and perhaps going into a physical building for more of those practical subjects. We're definitely going to see education changing here from the traditional model, and innovation and technology is really going to drive that.
Now, one of the concerns I actually had when literally March 23rd struck last year, and we pretty much at Lincoln University certainly had to switch virtually overnight to a totally online delivery system. And obviously we've had blended learning in betwixt times and then totally online and so on. But the concern was primarily the technology, because yes, as human beings, we can adapt, we can change things through, but there can be huge frustrations if your broadband isn't up to speed, if it's not connecting on that side of things, if your computer's getting on a little bit and it's not so effective. And that's not just from the point of view of the actual deliverers, it's from the point of view of the receivers as well. I'm often saddened by students who literally are having challenges because they haven't got the right tech.
The gap in the digital poverty divide in the country is huge. And that was very evident when schools first closed, and the number of young people that just didn't have access and didn't have access to the technology or the broadband connections. It's been really pleasing to see that the Department of Education has now passed out over 1 million devices across the country. We've now got broadband companies and telecoms companies offering free internet. We think that should continue for the long term, that every young person should have access to a device, every young person should have access to a reliable internet connection, because technology and innovation is going to be massive, not just for their school career, but in the future. So it's really important that the young people of today and our teaching workforce of today, you know, utilize and learn those digital skills which are going to enable them to really carry out this new way of learning. So the first thing, the most important thing is to really be able to roll out that technology to the people that need it most.
And we're just returning there to obviously the deliverers, the teachers, the tutors and so on from that point of view. I mean, I think one tends to work on the premise of, well, keep it simple initially. Yes, use Poll Everywhere if you're using Blackboard Collaborate, make use of that. Look at interactivity. Don't necessarily simply talk nonstop for 50 minutes and expect people to still actually be zoned into the whole system. Have various activities that are actually there. Are those all things that, in essence, as far as teacher training is actually concerned, and indeed people who are actually looking to deliver it, there needs to be a kind of reappraisal in terms of the best ways for the topics to be delivered, whilst at the same time keeping the essence of, I don't know, if you're delivering history, the kind of context that that history actually requires and needs?
Yes, teachers have done just an incredible job over lockdown to be able to support families from learning from home. But it's been really challenging because we've had to do it without any prior knowledge, any prior experience, and we've had to get online very, very quickly. So we've done the very, very best with the resources and knowledge that we have. If we are to look at this as a long-term solution to access to education for all and an inclusive access to education for all, then we do need to look at sort of upskilling those teachers, and you know, teacher training programs should certainly include the ability to deliver online, should include access to or training on things like artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality. These are really key innovative things that are going to be coming into education. So it's important that these teachers are upskilled to that effect, and really how to engage young people online. We've been doing it for 4.5 years and have got an incredible success with engagement and enjoyment with learning, but that's because we've developed a curriculum for online and we've got teachers who are trained for it. So what we need to do is now invest in our teachers, invest in that infrastructure to allow them to upskill them, to have the resources to be able to deliver really good engaging content online, because it's definitely going to be the future of education.
One of the major challenges, of course, of homeschooling has been the difficulty that many parents who have had to combine their own work or indeed distance working and other aspects with, of course, their children's tuition and so on. In that sense of the model of blended learning, and again, having bricks and mortar schools for certain subjects, there presumably needs to be some sort of backstop to ensure that children will actually be looked after and supervised when, of course, parents still need to actually go off and do their own things.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the biggest, if not the biggest, challenge at home over the last year is parents are perhaps working from home and don't have the capacity to work with or even supervise their children. So there's definitely going to have to be a really concise model that allows for a bit of both. I mean, if parents are continuing to work from home, perhaps, you know, there can be a model where, you know, the child is also at home, you know, but doing online learning. But, you know, certainly from what we, the way that we offer it, child can do it very independently. They don't need the parent to be there with them. They can do it, you know, they're accountable to their teacher. They don't need the parent to be with them. But we definitely need to look at what the structure of the in-person and the online approach is and where the child does it. Do they do it at home? Do they go to a library? Is there a central place within the school that they can go where they can, you know, carry out their online learning? So lots to think about, but we see huge, huge benefits. You know, we've got 97% pass rate at the international GCSE stage. We've got 95% engagement in the lessons that we have and re-engagement in learning. So lots of great success, and we're really passionate that we can roll this out and really sort of bring everybody together and bring communities together through the power of online.
Perhaps we could actually look forward to an artificially intelligence powered holographic version of Tom Crombie to actually supervise each student, each child, which I'm sure will be nice in its own way, or actually just have a robot nanny. Perhaps that's another line that could be pursued, although maybe that's a few more years away yet before we actually get around the system for AI and monitoring. Tom, where can people go to for further information about my online learning?
Yeah, so we are running free primary and secondary lessons on our Facebook page. So if you search for My Online Schooling on our Facebook page, you'll be able to get those. If you give us a like, you'll get notified of any free lessons. And we're running those while schools are closed. But if you want more information, myonlineschooling.co.uk, you'll get a lot of free homeschooling resources, but you will also get access to a bit more information on the courses that we run and the school setup that we run at My Online Schooling.
And as you say, offering a complete range of education from primary and secondary pupils from key stage two all the way through to A levels as well. So interesting times from that perspective. I can see certainly the next sort of challenge is going to be the degree of fit between obviously my online schooling and university material and so on and so forth. But that's humanity. That's what we do. Tom, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Keep on keeping on and continue excellent work with online schooling.
Thank you very much.